Afternoon, everybody. I appreciate you being here and sitting through another H1N1 presentation. I know we're all probably on H1N1 burnout. We were joking before this started. The room monitor in the back had said that H1N1 is kind of like childbirth. Now we can look back and say, gosh, isn't this great? We did a lot, but you forget how painful it was right in the middle. So I'm going to start just like Lynn did, with giving a little bit of context for our state and what we did. Like Minnesota, we are also have local authority for our health jurisdictions. And for those of you who don't live in a state like this, why this is really important is it makes your decision-making and your message consistency really challenging, because you have to work with all these different entities. And I was really glad we don't have 80, I think you said. 35 feels like way more than enough. But to get to some agreement on communications, and it really made some interesting challenges as we went through. But we have a fairly large state. I think we're 18th in state ranking, 6.6 million people, and a pretty big state geographically with a lot of diversity. So where we were for our just kind of our overall campaign messages was we were really trying to reach adults, really emphasizing mothers, because they have such a key role in health decision making, not just for their children, but for the other extended family members as well. And really focusing our messages on getting vaccinated is the most important thing you can do to prevent the flu, but really tying in some good health manners messages too. Like many other states and the CDC and everybody else, we did a ton of activities, and what Tim and I are going to be talking about today is really focusing in on the work we did for the general population and kind of general communications, not getting into like what Lynn was talking about, some of the things we did to reach more more ethnic or minority groups. So, constant change was the norm, as we all know, and this is a really big communication challenge, because your message is changing constantly, and then sometimes your messages contradict an earlier message you gave. And so how in the world do you try to get people to understand what was going on? So for us, something unique to Washington was in September, we have, we're one of those lucky states that have a thimerosal limits law. And so in September, we suspended that law for H1N1 vaccine. And I'll talk some more about that in a minute, but made some for some really unique communication activities. In October, we were really talking about priority groups and local differences, especially in a state like ours with that local authority. There was, and you know, the ACIP recommendations had some flexibility for local authority, and local demand. And so we did have, it wasn't as many as 35, but we had a lot of different things going on. And so what is a state? How did we find a message to say who should get vaccinated, when in one county it was healthcare workers and in another county it was moms? And just really interesting to try to figure out how to let the public know where and when and who can get vaccinated. In November, we did a lot on where's the vaccine? How can people find it? Which was ongoing from October. And can we agree on promotion? So the map is a map of what ended up being our website, how to find H1N1 vaccine in our community, and how we ended up handling this message of where to go to get vaccine. So you could click on each county and it would pop up with information the county had given us on who should get vaccinated in their county at that time and where the vaccine was. And also too, in addition to local differences in who they were vaccinating, how they were vaccinating was different. So some counties were doing school clinics, some were doing local health clinics, some were doing all private provider offices. And the note on can we agree on promotion was trying to get some agreement on when we could go forward with our PSA work. We had a lot of counties that were really hesitant on us doing anything. Some counties that were saying, why don't you just not do anything till January or later? And other counties that were saying, get going, we can't get, you know, we need people in the door. So just trying to balance those different demands. December, plenty more vaccine. We had the holidays, which we all were trying to wave a flag early on, saying by mid-December, nobody's going to care about the fact that we have plenty of vaccine. We have to be doing stuff now. And then the recall started in December. January, we actually found some creative ways to continue to promote vaccine, really also focusing on the need to get kids in for that second dose. And when we did that, we had, was one of our highest Twitter feeds was on the second dose, or when it was picked up the most, and just a way to continue to promote. And still trying to find ways to encourage vaccination without sounding like a broken record. We don't want to lose our credibility, but with the public, by keeping talking about and trying to push something that the public's not interested in. I wanted to talk a little bit about our suspending our thimerosal law, since this is something unique to just a few states, and I think there's some lessons learned for vaccine safety and some other things. So our law limits how much thimerosal can be in vaccines for children under 3 and pregnant women. And knowing early on we weren't sure how much thimerosal-free vaccine was going to be available, there's a clause in the law that allows the Secretary of Health to suspend that law. So we did that early on, and we went right out front with being very public about the fact that we were doing this, because we didn't want anybody later on to come back to us and accuse us of hiding something or doing something that that didn't protect their health, or were putting them at risk somehow. So I think we really used a lot of risk communication messages. I don't know if you can read it, but the news release on the left says mercury. The headline was mercury limit suspended for H1N1 swine flu vaccine to improve access, and that was really where we focused it in on improving access to the vaccine and giving people the choice to be vaccinated. We didn't want the law to be a barrier for people to not be able to get vaccinated. And I think we're really glad we did this way. It was a really difficult couple of weeks, because we did the news release, we did a lot of work through the medical associations to make sure providers knew what the new law was, and we did bring the anti-vaccine people out of the woodworks. But it was also really intentional, because we wanted to be able to be up front and have that dialogue and be leading it versus being accused of something later on. I think for that one of the things that I feel like I did miss in writing that news release was trying to stress even more that this is going back to what a standard of care is. Our law was something stricter than a standard of care, and the presence of, and the law says mercury, that's why we use the word mercury, which is versus thimerosal, because it's the language of the law. So it was just lots of interesting lessons learned, but I think I would really encourage people to be out front and use risk communication. When just recently we did another news release, because the suspension, it ended and we did not renew it, because the supply of options of vaccine is enough still, that, and the demand's so low that it's really not needed at this point. This is a picture of our agency website for H1N1, and you'll see just like the Minnesota website and many of yours, we had all kinds of information on there, where to find vaccine, some detailed FAQs on the vaccine, information for lots of different groups, including schools and businesses. And the last thing I want to talk about is just kind of looking at using some of routine communications that your agency or your department does, and using them in different new ways. So the slide's got a lot of information on it, but what it is examples of some messages we put on routine mailings our health department does. And the first one is we do health mailings to parents, and inside the mailing, we always include information on immunizations, but we actually had a couple taglines on the envelopes directing people to our websites and with some health information, which we had never done before for an outbreak type of situation. So the first one says, it's flu season, cover your cough, stay home when you're sick, get vaccinated, stop the flu, and has our web address. And later on, we changed that message to a second dose message for children. It's still flu season. Children under 10 need 2 doses of H1N1 vaccine. Talk to your doctor or clinic. Get vaccinated. Stop the flu. The second on the bottom there is our agency is also responsible for licensing healthcare providers in Washington State. So there was a whole bunch of blank white space that our agency wasn't using, kind of a dirty little secret, but so we stuck a notice on there, a message from Mary Selecki, our Secretary of Health, that says, as a healthcare provider, you know the importance of vaccination. I encourage you to get a seasonal flu shot and the H1N1 vaccine. And it goes on. But I think it was just another way for both of these reached hundreds of thousands of people, and just a good reminder to look at what some of your resources you have are, that you can do something really inexpensively. In addition to, now Tim's going to come talk about some of our public service announcement work we did.
Thanks, Michelle. Before I start, I did want to point out, I know it's crowded out there, but there are a couple empty seats in the front. If you can't find a place to sit back there, there's a few spaces up here. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the three-legged stool, I guess I would call it, that we use to reach the general public. Paid media, earned media, and a combination of whatever you want to call it, social media or new media. Before I get into the details, I want to set the stage with a couple of slides. I know this is a hard slide to read, but it makes a point that I think is just right on with H1N1 and with health and science type communication. You know, basically, you see the guy up here, there he is, and doing some research, and the research concludes A is correlated, giving C, assuming D, and under E conditions. You know, kind of complicated. The communications folks, like me, you know, turn that into a news release that says scientists find potential link between A and B, gets down to the news wire and the internet, and scientists out to kill us again. Cable news, A causes B all the time. What will this mean for Obama? What do you know about A can kill you more, you know, on the television news? And then the end result you see right here, grandma's wearing a foil hat. I use this to kind of inspire me every day of my work life, because if someone asks, you know, what's your job? My job's to keep grandma from having to wear a foil hat. that's really what it's about, is can we take complicated information, interpret it, and I'm going to say interpret because I always kind of take a little stab when somebody says, oh yeah, your job's to dumb it down so the stupid people can get it. And I don't believe that. I believe it's interpret it so stupid people like me can get it. And so grandma is informed and can take the right actions, but isn't so freaked out that she just thinks she has to wear a foil hat. So that's kind of where I start, and I think it's a perfect example of where we had to get to with H1N1. So that brings me to just something I'm very passionate about, which is the use of plain talk. And plain talk is one of those funny phrases that's different to all of us sometime. You know, you can have 3 or 4 or 10 of you out there talking, and you're going to use a term that is perfect if you're a master's in public health or you're an RN or something like that. But often we forget when we leave our circles and try to communicate to the general public or go home that those are words that normal people don't use. And so this was a struggle for us early on in H1N1. I'm sure any of you who worked in local health or nationally or at a state level had some discussion at some point about, what do we call this thing? Speaking from a communicator's point only, it was really easy at first because we said swine flu and people got it. You know, the media started using it, people got it. Then we did what public health and, my opinion only, what public health and science often does, which is say, yeah, but swine flu isn't quite accurate. You know, and besides that, people might stop eating bacon, and Porky Pig might be protested, and all those kind of things. So we decided. So some folks thought, well, it needs to be H1N1, and then so we used that a little bit. But someone said, well, H1N1 isn't quite accurate because this isn't just any H1N1. This is a novel virus, so we should start calling it novel H1N1. And then someone else said, well, you know, it's a 2009 virus, so it should be novel H1N1, or 2009 novel H1N1, and then someone else threw pandemic in it. And so so that was pretty plain talk by the end, as far as I saw it. You know, 2009 novel virus H1N1 pandemic, or some sort of mixture of that. I was on a work-related trip, and we were debating this in my agency, and I thought, I know, I'm gonna go on and see what other health departments are doing, and that's gonna give me the ammunition I need to sell that we should just call this swine flu. So I went on and looked at Minnesota's health department and Iowa's health department, and literally visited probably 30 health departments online, in part because I really wanted to know, and in part because I was in a hotel room and there was nothing on HBO that night. So I found what I feared, which is 30 health departments, and almost every one of them was different. You know, some had H1N1. The ones that had pork-producing states absolutely had nothing to do with swine on their website. And we were struggling in between. I had our epi staff on one side wanting to go with the very specific health name of it. My office, as you can tell by the slant I'm going on, wanted to say swine flu and just throw out the H1N1 stuff altogether. So I've learned a little bit in my time in public health. So what we did was an Elway poll. We have a contract with Elway that we can do polls very quick and very cheap. It cost me about $1,000. They interviewed about 400 people in my state, registered voters. It doesn't get me everybody, but it gets me a pretty good slice of people in our state. We asked them something pretty simple. You know, what do you know about H1N1 and swine flu? Are they the same thing? Are they different things? Are you not sure if they're the same thing or different things? 62% of the people said they're the same, so that was kind of good news. Unfortunately, about 40% of the people said, yeah, they're different, or boy, I don't really know. And a couple said, I'm wearing a foil hat, but that's a different piece of it. So as you got to the lower income and the lower educated groups, it was about 50-50. About half the people did not get that it was the same thing. So I used that as a tool to come up with compromise. And we ended up in our state calling it H1N1 swine flu. And it worked pretty well for us. The point on the whole story is it would have been much better if public health could have agreed on something and we all called it the same thing. If local health, state health departments, HHS, and the CDC were all calling it the same thing, it would have been much easier to communicate about and we would have been much more successful. Who knows who this is? Oh, good. There's a few people who know who this is. The ones who are under 30 are like, I have no idea. Is she on Survivor or something? No, that's Jan Brady. So for those of you who don't know, does anybody know what Jan Brady's big issue was? Yeah, Marsha. Jan was upset because Jan was the middle child. You know, there was Marsha above her, and Marsha got everything and was beautiful and had a perfect life. There was Cindy, who was younger than her, who was cute, and everybody loved her. And Marsha was that poor middle child. I was worried when I used this that since it was so late in the conference that other people would be using Jan Brady besides me, but I thought I'd take a shot and use it anyway. I use Jan Brady because at the state level, we're kind of the middle child. And there are times when we're working with the CDC and we're like, Marsha. And there are times when we're working with local health, and it's a complicated place to be. Now, I know that sounds like a little bit of whining, but it's a complicated place to be. We try to make our local health departments happy with the work that we do. We try to partner with the CDC. We rely on lots of people besides us to be successful. We cannot do it alone. And the second part of that statement is really, because of that, you can't do that stuff at the last minute. You can't say, oops, we got a new virus, better start making lots of partners and seeing who does immunization at the CDC now. We would have failed. The other important part of that is not only is it external, but internal. My office has a really strong relationship with our immunization program. It wasn't the first time I'd talked to Michelle when we started working together. I talked to Michelle probably two times a week, whatever is going on, because we know it's an important issue. We work together, so those partnerships are absolutely what helps you succeed. I have a couple videos I'm going to try and show. I'm hoping they work, but if they don't, there's few of us enough that you're all invited to my room and we'll look at them afterward. So this first one, kind of my segue into that, is this is not a complicated PSA, but I'm proud of it because we put this PSA out in very short order in the spring. The only reason we were able to do that was because of the partnerships that existed. This was produced by a contractor that I didn't have a contract with. I got a call. I was at a Mariners game. It was early on in the outbreak before I realized that every free moment of my life would be taken for a while. But I was at a Mariners game and I got a call from the Nursing Association and on a Sunday. And she said, "I'm working with the Hospital Association. Do you mind if I conference her in?" And I'd worked with both of them before, so I'm like, "Sure, go ahead." And they said, "We have a contractor and we're hoping to put out a PSA about swine flu." She didn't say H1N1, by the way. And we talked, and I had some money, but in my state anyway, it can take me 6 to 8 weeks to get a contract to work with a PR company. So we talked, we agreed on content over the fourth inning, and the Mariners were getting killed, so it wasn't a big deal for me anyway. So we agreed on content. I said, "You know, I'll give you $50,000, but I want my health officer in it." And the hospital association said, "You know, I'll put in another $50, but I want this person in it." And we said, "Okay, these are the important messages," and we went ahead and did it. So within a couple of weeks from the start of the outbreak, we had this PSA running. Come on.
Healthcare providers are prepared and ready to combat swine flu.
Good hygiene is your best defense, but use the same judgment you would during a typical flu season.
Stay home if you feel sick and limit contact with others. If you have only mild symptoms, you may not need medical care.
If you have concerns about your symptoms, call your health care provider first. For more information, call the Washington State Department of Health Swine Flu Information Line.
Together, we can prevent the spread of swine flu.
It was simple, it wasn't fancy, but it got out quick and we got messages out there. And it also started a partnership that we ended up using throughout the outbreak. We actually adapted this and changed it a little bit and used it in the fall, the same kind of thing. They were thrilled that I was putting money in. I was thrilled that I didn't have to go through an 8-week contracting process to run a PSA. So we all won because we had a good partnership available. I want to switch very quickly to earned media, because while I'm a big supporter of PSAs and paid media, earned media is a bread and butter for me as well, and we made sure we were aggressive in earned media. Just a couple of things. This picture is our stockpile where we had antivirals, masks, etc. We had a lot of interest from media on it, and we tried to come up with a way to get them to cover it without telling them where it was. We thought about having them blindfolded and drive there, but that didn't work. So instead we went and we took pictures with our own camera. We posted them on the internet, so not only media, but the general public could see them, and we put out a news release about it. And it was the lead story on two stations that day with just 6 or 8 pictures of our stockpile. So that did a couple of things. It showed the media that we were doing our best to get them information and be as transparent as we could. And anytime we could get on the media and talk about our messages, it was a victory for us. The other one down below is a news conference we held at our lab. That's actually a local health officer. Just about every news conference we held, we invited the local health person to be with us. So it was a consistent joint message, and they saw that we were working together, and it worked quite well. And then the one up top is in our lab. It was challenging throughout the process, and it was a real negotiation process on my part because we had to work with our lab. We really wanted media in there, but our lab was just swamped day and night. So we found a day that they were not as swamped as they were typically, and we brought in about 20 media, just toured them through, made lab people available, showed them tests, Each one of these things just gave us an opportunity. It gave us an opportunity to get messages out. It also gave us an opportunity to just say, hey, we are your credible source on this issue. Don't go other people. Don't believe what you read on the web. You know, go to us. We're your credible source on what's going on in our state. And it worked quite well for us. Okay, so in the spring, as things sort of died down, I was really pleased. We kicked around, we had a little money left, and we said, let's think about the fall. So we, Michelle and I worked together, a little immunization money, a little of my money, and on a shoestring budget, we created a radio spot, not knowing what the fall was going to be like, and this is what we ended up with that we used starting in September.
I'm in the business of making connections. I'm everywhere, on keyboards, pin pads, grocery carts. Ha! My friends call me Flu. To you, I'm Mr. Influenza. I hate soap. But my real enemy's flu shots.
Don't meet Mr. Influenza. All flu strains can be serious. Get a flu shot, wash your hands often, cover your coughs and sneezes, and stay home if you're sick. Talk to your nurse or doctor and visit the Washington State Department of Health at doh.wa.gov.
Yeah.
Not particularly complicated, just straightforward messages. We didn't know what October and November were going to be like. We started running this in September, did a mid-sized radio buy, and just kind of waited to see what happened. We also started working on a television spot later in the summer and fall. While the initial spot I showed you had talking heads, which is what I would call them, and that's okay when you're rushing something out, I'm a strong believer in talking heads don't cause people to stop in front of their television and watch what's going on. I'm a firm believer that if you have your TiVo and you're fast-forwarding through the commercials, you're not going to stop and watch a talking head. So we came up with a concept that we knew was kind of edgy. We knew not everyone was going to like, but we knew people would stop and watch it. So this is what we did.
It can attack anyone. The young, the healthy. H1N1 swine flu. It can cause fever, respiratory failure, or death. But that doesn't have to happen. Wash your hands, cover your cough or sneeze, stay home when you're sick. Getting vaccinated is the best protection.
A couple quick points on that. You know, I think it accomplished what we wanted to. People stopped and watched the television. We did have and continue to get a share of complaints every now and then, although it's always kind of interesting to me because I'll get a complaint that's something like this. You know, dear Department of Health, you know that television spot with the woman sneezing that tells me to cover my cough, wash my hands, and get vaccinated. It's a horrible spot and you shouldn't run it. And I was like, well, you know, dear sir, sorry, you know, that's how it goes, you know. But most people are getting the message. Even if they hate the spot, they get the message. And I'm okay with that, to be honest with you. I would rather have them hate the spot and get the message than love the spot and forget what it's about. I want to quickly go through this. We used online ads, tweets, and YouTube. We knew that was a segment of what we had to do. A key point for me on that, I've heard lots of presentations on this topic here, and I think online stuff, tweets, they're important, but they're not the be-all and end-all, and lots of people still get their information from television, radio, newspapers. Use them, but don't think they're the second coming. They should be a piece of a strategy, not an entire strategy. We did about 2 tweets a day. We're certainly learning as we go and continue to. They did help us reach some folks that we normally don't reach. My son's in college. He doesn't watch television shows on television. He watches them on Hulu. We had online spots that ran on Hulu, so if you wanted to watch The Office, you had to see our spot first. If you wanted to watch, as somebody said, the sneezing panda on YouTube, you had to see our spot first. So it was a different group. I can't tell you that I today can measure how much it helped, but it was relatively cheap, and we knew it was reaching a different audience. I'm going to quickly just go through some evaluation we did. One of the things that I've learned in my time at public health is, you know, don't throw all your money into focus groups and producing something and not evaluate it. It's not, then you lose those lessons forever. So we did a 600 phone call poll. 200 oversample for young mothers because that was a group we wanted to reach. This question, did you see this ad, basically? Did you see it? Are you familiar with it? Unaided, without describing it to them, the overall answer was about 40%. When we described them, that went up to like 70%. Although, unaided, if you look at this, women under 35, 66% of women under 35 unaided remembered our television spot. Young moms, a little less. We would have liked to see that a little higher, but it was almost 50%. We talked to our advertising company, and a traditional good number for this would have been about 30%, so we bested that. The percentage of respondents who said the ad impacted their health decisions. We not only wanted to remember it, we wanted to know they thought about it and made some decisions possibly. These numbers we could not be more pleased with. Again, the moms are in the middle somewhere, which shows it's an inexact science still targeting people, but young moms, 25 to 34, about 50% of them said it impacted their health decisions, about 40% of young moms in a little bit older age group. And then finally, we asked them, if you didn't get vaccinated, why? Not a big surprise here, but we were glad to have the information. Safety. Top number, they didn't get vaccinated, 18% said safety. Another 18% said vaccine availability. I don't think that's a big surprise either. And then some of them said, I just didn't want to do it. You know, time was also an issue for moms. We have some other data. Some just said, I don't have the time to do it, so I didn't. So anyway, it was interesting. We learned a lot, and we're going to take these learnings and plow them into the next time we have something like this. So thank you.
Well, Tim, thank you very much. We've got a couple of minutes here for questions, and I would ask if you have a question, please go to the microphone. So that we'll be able to record this and share it with others. And folks, on the way to the microphone, a couple of quick things. Tonight at 6 o'clock, we're going to have the Zumba Fitness event. It'll be in Hanover Hall. And also, for those of you that need to get registrations, please stop by the conference registration desk for your receipts. And your first questions, please identify who you are and ask your questions.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity. Ryan Deal with the Georgia Department of Community Health. I'm curious about the thimerosal relaxation, if you will, in Washington. That seems unique to me. Is the law different in Washington? Does it require less? Or can you address that a bit and how you were able to determine you needed to do that as a public health authority?
How we determined we needed to limit
or relax the limits,
relax the law. We realized early on that the law was going to be a barrier with that. We didn't know how much thimerosal free vaccine was going to be available early on or how much would meet the requirements of the law. And so we did not want to have a law that was prevent young children and pregnant women from getting vaccinated or having the option from getting vaccinated because we thought.